Devices Radio Network.
Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 89. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout for additional savings, as well as to support the show and let them know that you heard about them through us. Guys, we've got Dr. Dean St. Mart here with us today. I'm really excited about this. He's somebody I didn't know very well, but he is a very passionate guy. He's really interested in the health behind, you know, what you're doing in bodybuilding. It's something that I think we can take for granted when we're doing well. But I can tell you, you know, if you do this long term, you're going to have points in your life where, you know, bodybuilding is very important, and points of life where it's not quite as important. But it's always going to be there for you. There's nothing like that feeling of walking out of the gym, knowing that you just laid it all out there. You did everything you could. There's nothing like that feeling, no matter what level you're at. And I want to be able to keep that feeling with me for the rest of my life. And for that reason, we need to stay healthy. And so that's what we're going to talk about today in a lot of aspects. He works over there with Jordan Peters at the Trained by JP site. He's also a formulator, but he puts out a lot of really great information. And what I like about it is not only does he explain his reasoning behind things, he helps to teach you so that you can understand it too, which I think that that's great. And that's where we can learn a lot. We can learn a lot from people like this. So we'll get to that in a moment. I want to tell you that we are planning a live event for the Arnold Classic. I would love an opportunity to get to meet everybody. So guys, if you are going to the Arnold, it'll be Saturday morning at the convention center, just off the expo. We're going to have a room down the hall where it'll be, you know, not quite, there won't be like the Bang Girls in their thongs dancing and screaming, which, I mean, that's good too, but, you know, it doesn't work while you're doing a podcast. So we're going to do that just down the hall. It'll be a little bit quieter where we can all talk. It would be great because in the past when we've done our meetups, it's so hard to hear everybody. So this will give us a chance to actually have some conversations. And then we're gonna do a panel style podcast with Q&A from you guys, the audience. I'll get to more of that in the not too distant future here. It's gonna be sponsored by the best bar ever. They are bringing back a brand new perishable bar, new and improved. I appreciate everything that they're doing for us, and they're helping to make sure that this thing goes through. So thank you, Best Bar. And on the note of sponsors, the last thing I want to mention is I wanted to give you guys thanks, first of all. Thank you to everybody who has been using the Advices code. It's just the word Advices with an S. I appreciate it because you're letting True Nutrition know that you support the program, and in turn, they are happy to support us. You know, at the end of the day, this is business, right? But I'm really grateful that we could do business with a company like True Nutrition because I absolutely believe in what they're doing. They have really great products, a lot of different varieties of proteins, but even outside of that, there's a lot of other things that I pick up from them. You know, Himbine, my L-tyrosine powder. I like Carboload. It's a less expensive intra-workout powder, less expensive than like your highly branched cyclic dextrin. I've had a number of clients that have used that and had really good results, and you can save a ton of money in the process. So there are products for people at all budgets, and they are all super high quality because the people that put this stuff together they're actually like us. They're real people. They're bodybuilders. They do this because they love the community too. So it's a great match. I'm glad to have them. Guys, use the code ADVICES. Let's get to Dr. Dean. Dr. Dean St. Mart. How you doing, brother? Thanks for being with us.
I'm good, Scott. Thanks very much for having me on. I'm a huge fan of the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you here. I've actually had several people who've reached out to me over the past few months and said, hey, you should get Dr. Dean on. Get Dr. Dean on. And I hadn't been, you know, I try to follow as many people as I can, and I hadn't followed a lot of what you had done yet. So I've been, you know, stalking you on Instagram and seeing what you're doing, but I'm still, you know, I'm still probably not as educated as to who you are as some of the listeners are. So for me, and maybe for some of the other people listening today, this is going to be kind of an introduction to you. And for some of you guys, you may have already heard some of this stuff from Dr. Dean. So for starters, you're a doctor, you live in Ireland, and you are affiliated with Jordan Peters. Is he your coach?
Yeah, Jordan Peters is my coach. I've been with Jordan since late 2016.
Okay.
So I've been sort of friends with Jordan on social media, and after I competed in the NABBA WFF World Championships, I approached Jordan to be coached by him. I'd always admired his work, and he was absolutely delighted to take me on board. So over the last couple of years, we've developed a really good friendship and business association. So most people probably know me as the educator on his forum. I'm guessing that's where a lot of people have pushed you to get in contact with me from.
Well, and here's the thing, too. You and I, we've talked here for just a few minutes before we actually hit the button and started recording. Just out the gate, what I want to say is, okay, so guys, Dean is here to educate people. That's what that's what you see yourself as right now. In when we talk bodybuilding, you're helping people to better understand what's going on in their bodies so that they'll be able to better make the decisions they need to live a healthier life. Just in the 5 minutes we've talked, I feel like the way you speak is very demystifying. You've broken some things down for me in that 5 minutes that can help me better understand everything in a more logical way. Because at the end of the day, I feel like everything we do in bodybuilding, there's no magic about it, but it's, you have to understand what's happening in order to make logical decisions, right?
Yeah, no, of course. And that's why in the last 3 or 4 years, I've been fascinated with the area known as functional medicine. Hmm. So functional medicine would be the sort of polar opposite to modern conventional medicine.
Okay.
In that conventional medicine generally fits a drug to a disease to treat a symptom.
Hmm.
So if you have high blood pressure, it will give you an A or B or an ACE inhibitor and will, you know, block angiotensin converting enzyme from raising your blood pressure.
Right.
They don't take into account what's going on in your body to drive that blood pressure high.
Okay.
Whereas functional medicine gets to the root by asking, you know, why are these symptoms manifesting, and then actually understanding the mechanisms that are driving the high blood pressure and then addressing those root causes to eliminate the need for, you know, long-term medication.
You would think that that would be the approach in general. I mean, that sounds logical to me, but you're telling me that that's not the way mainstream medicine works?
No, unfortunately not. Hmm. Unfortunately, conventional medicine always goes for what drug fits the disease rather than, and also what drug fits the symptom as opposed to getting to the root cause.
Okay.
Maybe it's just on it. When general practitioners are treating people that they just don't have the time to delve into it, or they just don't have the interest.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate. And again, that's where I started applying functional medicine theories towards bodybuilding to help improve people's health.
Okay. And that's where, you being a formulator also comes into play, because then once you can figure out the causes of something, then you would better understand how you could potentially fix that, be it through, dietary changes or some sort of a lifestyle change, or possibly using a supplement. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do as a formulator?
So again, a lot of people probably know me as the formulator for the supplement line, the health supplement line, I mean, with Supplement Needs, which is a UK supplement company. So I approached Lee, who owns Supplement Needs, last year with the first product, which is the Sleep Stack. So again, that's probably what a lot of people know me as, towards the Dr. Dean Sleep Stack.
Mm.
And what drove that was a lot of people are always asking, well, how can I optimize my sleep? How can I get my sleep better? And then you have all these, you know, products like sedative products that have phenibut and melatonin, and really essentially they're just, you know, band-aiding and sort of knocking you out.
Sure, sure. I've used all both of those things, and GABA and everything else. So, like, I've taken a lot of stuff to not necessarily fix my sleep, but like you use the word band-aid it.
Yeah, and I mean, when I approached Lee, I said to him, I've been using this stack of ingredients for the last year and a half. And I guarantee you, if you put this together as a product and I explain how it works, it's going to be a game changer towards people's sleep dynamics within the fitness industry.
Hmm.
In that the issue when people have sleep problems is that either one, they have a lack of serotonin, so they can't fall asleep.
Okay.
Two, they either have too many neurotransmitters in their brain, so their brain can't relax to allow them to fall asleep. So you have that racing brain when you're lying in bed. And then the third one is that you can fall asleep, but then several hours later, like I'm sure a lot of people can agree with, when you're on prep, you wake up and you can't fall back asleep.
Oh, yeah. I know that all too well. And, all of them, actually.
And that last one is driven by a lack of melatonin.
Huh.
So with the sleep stack, I put together a 6-ingredient supplement which addresses all three of those things.
Okay.
So we provide 5-HTP that will give you tryptophan to feed into serotonin. But that conversion of 5-HTP to serotonin won't occur unless the enzyme that does the job is supported again. So that enzyme needs vitamin B6.
Huh, okay.
So we added in pyridoxine 5-phosphate, which is the active form of vitamin B6. So now you're pushing the 5-HTP that you're taking down to serotonin, and that's getting you to fall asleep.
Hmm.
Then what I added in was magnesium bisglycinate.
Mm.
So again, you have an enzyme in your body called COMT, and that's catechol-O-methyltransferase. And its job is to clear catecholamines out of your body, basically. So catecholamines would be dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine.
Hmm.
So when you're lying in bed at night and your mind is racing, it's generally that you have so much dopamine flying around your brain, and COMT isn't clearing it out.
Really?
Now, the other thing that COMT clears is estrogen.
Hmm.
So if you're on a contest prep and you're not controlling aromatization, that estrogen is adding a burden to COMT on top of all those neurotransmitters.
Hmm.
So that enzyme starts to slow down, and we start to develop those sort of insomnia patterns in enhanced athletes.
Oh, because of a completely different mechanism, because of estrogen, and now you're unable to clear dopamine because of something. Okay, it just goes to show how interrelated everything is then.
Yeah, and I mean, what COMT requires to work effectively is magnesium.
Okay.
So if we give the body magnesium, we're keeping up with the demand for COMT to clear out estrogen and clear out dopamine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine to allow you to calm down and fall asleep.
Interesting. I've seen magnesium used to help with sleep, and I never understood why. And I've used it in the evening time, and I have felt more of a sense of restfulness, and I didn't understand that this was the reason.
And the other reason is also, it's also the chelate that's associated to the magnesium. So I specifically chose magnesium bisglycinate.
Mm-hmm.
Because bisglycinate is 2 glycine molecules. And glycine feeds into the production of another neurotransmitter, which you're probably aware of, GABA.
Okay.
And yes. GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter in your brain. So that calms everything right down. You know, it brings you into a lulled, dampened state.
Yeah.
So you have COMT being supported with the magnesium, and then you have the 2 glycines breaking off and going off to GABA.
Okay.
So now your brain is starting to relax down. The serotonin is starting to increase from the 5-HTP, so you're getting drowsy. Then I also put in L-theanine, which again is feeding off into more GABA to really calm the brain down. So L-theanine is just an amino acid. And then I also combined zinc monomethionine, which is a form of zinc, to help calm the nervous system down.
Okay.
So now you're setting the scene for falling asleep and getting into a nice, calm state.
And never a drugged feeling I'm getting from this too.
No. This is just a complete relaxation. And a lot of people who have tried the sleep sack say that within about 45 minutes on an empty stomach, you start to get just this heaviness of your eyes that you actually feel nice and calm to fall asleep.
Nice.
Then once that gets you into a sleep state, the serotonin makes you fall asleep, but it's also making sure that your body is producing melatonin.
Okay.
While you're and that's the inherent issue where when people take melatonin supplementation to get them to sleep, the half-life of melatonin is so fast. So later on in the night, your body runs out of melatonin and it wakes you up.
Okay.
But what you want to do is, again, this is going back to understanding these pathways, serotonin feeds into melatonin production. So if I can increase serotonin before sleep, keep it in the body, and then push that to melatonin, it will keep you asleep.
I see.
So the enzyme which converts serotonin to melatonin requires vitamin B5. So by putting vitamin B5 into the sleep stack, the serotonin that's being made to make you fall asleep, then later in the night is being pushed to melatonin to keep you asleep.
That's interesting, man. And I take it too with something like this. Then, I've used Phenibut. I've used just straight GABA at high doses. I've even used things like Ambien. I've used a lot of this stuff regularly. You're not getting quality out of that sleep, though, right?
No. In that your brain is still sort of active in those states. It's more of a lull state where you're not actually progressing through restorative sleep cycles.
Okay.
Whereas with that sleep stack that I've come up with, it's making you fall asleep, and then it's up to your body then to dictate what sleep phases you go through based on your body's own need.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is that it's all natural. It's all feeding into these sleep pathways, so you never develop a dependence on it, or you never experience a withdrawal. When it's removed, it's removed, and then you're back to your normal sleeping pattern.
Interesting.
What's interesting is there's always uproar because as soon as it's produced, it's sold out within like hours. So
no kidding.
Yeah, it's very, very popular. So at the moment, in the UK, Lee has distributed it to about 5 different companies and they are selling the product also. So there is high demand for it, which is really cool.
That's badass. And you just, we'll talk about everything later logistically, but I can order this in the US, right?
Yes, you can. Yeah, if you message Supplement Needs, if you go onto Supplement Needs website, the shipping just gets calculated ridiculously. So you're better off just emailing Lee and he will give you a quote. And it's quite cheap. It's something like £14 or £15, I think, to ship to the US.
Okay, fair enough. While we're on the topic of sleep and supplements, maybe I can pick your brain a little bit. Do you have any thoughts on Benadryl as a sleep aid? Because that's something that I've depended on and off, and I've known a lot of other people that use it. It's a popular ingredient in products like ZQL and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on using that antihistamine for sleep? Is there anything detrimental about it?
No, but again, when we look at those class of compounds, antihistamines, they're effectively feeding off into a drowsy pathway because they affect the receptors of the eyes. So they make you drowsy. So that's what makes you fall asleep. But again, it's not supporting. It's making you drowsy so your eyes close and, then you can start to calm down and fall asleep. But with antihistamines, again, it's not, if you have high histamine in your body, it's not blocking. That histamine is still in your body to do a myriad of other things. And I mean, that was another topic completely separate here to sleep, but people often don't realize the digestive issues that you may encounter when you use certain anabolics.
Okay.
Can be primarily driven by histamine.
No kidding.
So a lot of people, like, let's take it out there, Trenbolone, and I've explained this in a story on Instagram, was that we need to go back to the very start, like I said, and understand the root causes. So when we take AAS or androgens, they act on androgen receptors. So what affects your stomach acid is actually histamine production. You have histamine receptors in your stomach. So when you have high histamine, you get high stomach acid and you get that, you know, nauseous and poor digestion that can be associated with trenbolone.
Sure.
But within the body, there's androgen receptors everywhere. But if we look at a particular type of cell known as mast cells, they have androgen receptors. They're an immune cell. When androgen binds to androgen receptors on mast cells, it causes them to release their histamine. So now you have high histamine in your stomach, which feeds into high stomach acid, which then gives you those digestive problems. So either you can support the enzyme which clears histamine from your body, which is DAO, diamine oxidase. And again, we go back to the cofactor that needs copper. A lot of people are deficient in copper.
Okay.
So you can either take DAO as an enzyme, or you can do what I've done with a few people. And I know Luke Sandow went on about this before when I discussed it with him. You can take an antihistamine and that stomach issue of trenbolone goes away.
No kidding.
Now, the problem there is that you've blocked the histamine receptors, but you still have high histamine.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're sort of, you know, this is, you're going at it from the angle of conventional medicine of, okay, let's take out the symptom. So now you're able to eat properly, but now you have high histamine in your body. And again, high histamine can feed into, you know, allergic reactions, etc. So it's not, you're sort of, you know, counteracting one over the other, rather than actually, it's probably better to go to the root cause and either lower the dose of trenbolone to stop that mast cell activation, which again, people probably won't want to do.
Right.
Or you feed in and help support the enzyme, which is clearing that histamine as it's being produced.
Okay. Now let me ask you something here. So you've deducted this, say you're working with somebody, be it a client or just some, you know, me, we're talking and you figured this out. Do you figure this out just through discussion, or is there something that you would also do with blood work to back up the thought? Basically, how do you come to your conclusion that this is what needs to be done in this situation?
Several things. I mean, in that regard, it was just an understanding of biochemistry and how histamine is formed and how histamine affects stomach acid.
Okay.
So again, you wouldn't really get an answer from blood work. But in another regard, if someone's having, say, issues with high blood pressure or high cholesterol, blood lipids, we then look at blood work to try and figure out the root cause of what's going on. Okay. Or, say, liver inflammation. That's where blood work would be more useful in terms of diagnostics and figuring out what the issue is to help that client.
Man, you go deep. I can already see it. what's gotten you so passionate about this? Because I feel like just in this few minutes we've been talking, I can tell, man, you love this stuff. Where does that come from?
I guess it stemmed. I mean, before all this, I was a real personal bodybuilder and I kept to myself, you know, I was fascinated with feeding into all these biochemical processes and how they affect your own body to help myself, because obviously I'm a competitive bodybuilder for myself. And then I guess as I started getting my theories out there, I sort of started to drive the underlying fact that no one is really discussing these issues of, you know, root causes and keeping bodybuilders healthy. In that we have all these forums online and people giving out advice. And it's generally like giving out general protocols based on anecdotal evidence, or such and such said this, and now we're to take that all the time without understanding.
Yeah.
Why? Like, I mean, for example, Tudke with issues of the liver, most people fail to realize that Tudke is actually a bile acid and it doesn't really do anything for your reducing your liver inflammation.
Really?
Yeah, what it really does is it helps to aid in bile flow so that you don't get backflow of bile into your liver, which causes inflammation then. So the root cause there is cholestasis, where you have a buildup of cholesterol in the bile ducts of your gallbladder, causing that bile to backflow into the liver, causing inflammation. But if you don't have cholestasis and issues with bile flow, then taking Tudka isn't going to address what's causing your liver inflammation.
So in another situation, it could be useless as far as protecting you from damage, say, due to D-ball or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, these oral steroids do cause cholestasis in how they're metabolized. So it may be potentially useful to counteract that cholestasis, but unless you have the symptoms of cholestasis, Tudka isn't really going to do any benefit. Whereas if we look at what primarily drives liver inflammation and liver processes, we need to really address phase one and phase two liver metabolism of how the liver is breaking down these compounds to be excreted.
Okay.
And for one, phase two metabolism, what we do there is we conjugate a water-soluble compound onto these toxic metabolites to allow you to excrete them out in the urine.
Can you explain that to me more? Just consider me a total layman.
Yeah. So if we consider a steroid is like a fat molecule. It's fat-soluble. That's why we have it in oils.
Okay.
Now, when that passes into the liver to be metabolized, it can't be excreted in the urine as it is because it's organic. It's fat-soluble.
Okay.
To make it simple. What we need to do is do a transformation process to that molecule to make it water soluble so that now you can put it into the urine to be excreted.
Okay.
And that's where phase two metabolism comes in. Phase two metabolism in your liver attaches, say, a sulfate group, or it can attach glutathione to the compound.
Okay.
Now all of a sudden that compound is in its essence deactivated and can be pushed into the urine to be excreted.
Okay, so that's the point where it is then converted. And then is that also where the damage happens?
Yeah, so if you can think about it, you're overloading your liver with these toxic substances, as to speak.
Okay.
And unless you can keep up with the demand of recycling glutathione to feed into that phase two metabolism, eventually you're going to run out of glutathione and that toxic metabolite has nowhere to go. It can't be pushed out into the urine simply. Okay. So that's where, you know, with supplement needs, I come up with this product of liposomal glutathione. When we look back, people recommend NAC.
Yeah.
NAC acts as a sulfur donor to feed into the biochemical pathways which makes glutathione.
Okay.
So it acts as a donor. It doesn't actually increase glutathione. Your body then has to do the work of, you know, removing the cysteine, taking that sulfur bridge and feeding it into glutathione reductase, which is the enzyme that recycles glutathione.
So basically using NAC is the goal is basically to create more glutathione in your body versus the product that you're talking about, glutathione, as just a direct supplement itself. You just cut out the middleman, basically.
Exactly. Now, a lot of people get misconstrued in that oral reduced glutathione, which is in a lot of oral capsule products, is useless because when it reaches the stomach, it just gets hydrolyzed.
Okay, I've heard that.
But with liposomal glutathione, a liposome is a fat, little fat globule. And what you do is you use nanotechnology to put the glutathione into the liposome. And liposomes get directly uptaken by your liver cells, or any cell in the body for that matter.
Okay, but we're targeting, we're looking at some of these, hopefully, are going to liver cells.
Your liver, yeah. And basically then the hepatocytes take up the liposome and then lyse it. So they break it open to give it the glutathione that it needs.
Huh, no kidding.
So, and if people want to, this is again where you can actually use blood work then to assess someone's glutathione needs. In that you have gamma GGT on a blood test.
Okay.
So it's gamma glutamyl transferase. And that gives you an understanding of how glutathione is being recycled in the body.
Okay. So this is something you can directly look at.
Yeah. When you see GGT on a blood test, this is where it really drives me mental about reference ranges when it comes to blood work.
How so?
Because blood work reference ranges are based on that laboratory who do blood works, normal populations. So they get the the lowest 10% reading and the highest 10% reading, and they drop it out.
Okay.
And that leaves you with a normal distribution of the highest reference range and then the lowest reference range. But if you have someone who's really sick being tested by that laboratory, they can be skewing that reference range out beyond where it should be.
Interesting.
So with GGT, it goes from 10 all the way up to 55. But we know from research that if you have GGT higher than 20, you're at high risk of cardiovascular disease and liver inflammation issues.
But you would still be in the normal range, you're saying, based off of their quote-unquote norms.
Exactly, and it doesn't get flagged by a normal physician.
Interesting.
So what you ideally want is GGT between 16 and 20. That's like the sweet spot.
16 to 20, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you know that you're actually keeping up with your body's glutathione demands for phase 2 metabolism.
And so if this is something you wanted to test, a lot of times, you know, I think to myself, okay, you know, I take, you know, NAC while I'm doing a contest prep, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm doing this and I trust that it's working. I imagine from what you're telling me here, I could get tested if I decided I needed glutathione and I started using like a liposomic version like you have. I could test later and I would see an improvement in my reading.
Yes, you would.
Okay.
Definitely. And like, again, you could even do the experiment of taking NAC, doing your blood work to see where GGT is.
Yeah.
And is it effective at giving you your glutathione recycling needs, say in the context of a contest prep when you're using hepatotoxic substances? And then after, say, 4 weeks, you could add in glutathione and then watch what happens to GGT. Does it fall?
Okay. Interesting.
Because of the support you've added.
That's cool that you can see that. Because a lot of times we have to rely on people like yourself that say, well, Dr. Dean's educated, I'm just going to trust him on this one. But in this case, you can actually go and check on your own.
No, exactly. And that's the whole point of me educating, is that I want to give you the information that, yes, there's supplements there that you can take, but actually understand why you're taking them.
That's badass,
rather than following anecdotal, you know, driven advice of, well, we've been taking this for years and we know that it helps support the liver, but why does it support the liver?
Yeah, I appreciate that. How long have you been competing for? I'm looking at your picture right now. We're chatting on Skype. We both have our most muscular shots up side by side. We're about the same size ballpark. I think you're a little bit bigger up top than I am. And you're a couple inches taller than me, but you got a hell of a physique, man. How old are you now, and when did you get into bodybuilding?
I'll be 31 next month on the 24th of February. So I've been competing since 2011.
Nice.
So I compete every year from 2011 all the way up to 2017.
Okay.
And last year I took a year out to start a family with my wife.
Oh, nice, man.
And then prior to that, I was a kickboxer. I was a world champion kickboxer. So I was always involved with the gym and training.
You're kidding. So I take it a lot of the stuff that we are talking about today are things that you've discovered to help with your own health.
Exactly. I mean, that's like I said, I was a very personal driven bodybuilder. And of course, in Ireland, people sort of knew who I was with the competition scene. And it'd be like, they'd approach me and ask questions, but I'd never actually get my theories out there. I always thought I'll just, you know, stay within my own bubble.
Yeah.
And then the last couple of years, like I said, enough was enough. I thought it's time to. I started seeing people like Scott delivering excellent educational info, and Victoria Falker, and all these podcasts that I love listening to. And I thought, right, enough's enough. I have all this information in my head. It's time to actually share it out and get people on board.
Hell yeah, man. Well, I'm glad that you made that decision, because I'm picking up some stuff here. And I'm sure everybody else is too. Hey, before we go in any further, I got to pick your brain about Ireland, because I have lineage from Ireland. Half, you know, my dad's side of the family was from there. I've never been. What's the bodybuilding scene like there?
It's in the last couple of years, it's sort of dwindled a bit. When I first got into bodybuilding in 2011, I done the Irish IFBB Nationals, and that was a big show. The same with 2012. We had Kai Green over guest posing for our nationals.
Nice.
And that show ran. That show ran like an NPC show until like 1 a.m. in the morning. Just Ooh. That many competitors.
Nice.
But over the last couple of years, it's sort of dwindled. Whether it's because of the Fitspo, you know, Instagram era of people aren't actually pursuing bodybuilding for its actual competition goals rather than aesthetics. So in the last couple of years, it's sort of dwindled a little bit in that the Irish legends themselves have all sort of retired.
Okay.
So in terms of, you know, the overall competitor level, it's sort of wide open the last couple of years to anyone sort of taking the overall national title.
Okay.
Whereas when I first started competing, it was like, given that such and such would win basically at national level. And I mean, we do have, in the last couple of years, we have the likes of Shane Cullen and Victor Bartello and Claire, who are all IFBB pros. And then we have Tommy Staunton, who's Mr. Universe. So we have champions within Ireland on a well-known level. So it's not as small as people would think.
Yeah, everything waxes and wanes, you know. So if it's a little slower now, I'm sure that, you know, it'll probably be different in another year or two. I mean, I think of like what's happening in England now, and bodybuilding is so popular there. Do you ever get a chance to go over and hang out with Jordan and the guys over there?
I've gone over to Jordan a couple of times. I actually, that picture in my profile is me competing at Jordan's Grand Prix back in 2017.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
That year I came fifth out of, I think it was 19 in the classic class. But that sort of has now given me my direction of where I'm going the next couple of years, because unfortunately at that competition, the judges' feedback was it was a great physique, well-rounded, but just a little too big for their classic criteria.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So smaller guys actually beat me to first, second, third, which was a little strange, because I think when I look back at those pictures, I'm really stoked that, like, wow, that's like the best physique I've ever brought to the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Sort of I tell you.
Exactly where I'm going to go in the next couple of years of progressing into open bodybuilding.
Oh, beautiful.
More so than, you know, classic.
Nice, man. So what's your training like then? I assume if you're working with Jordan, you're doing some type of a lot of big basic movements, probably a higher frequency, lower volume.
Yeah. It's currently I'm doing 3-on, 1-off, 2-on, 1-off, because my recovery capabilities are quite good. So we have chest, shoulders, biceps, and then a 2 back days, so a back thickness and a back width day.
Okay.
And then we've legs sort of targeted in that I have a leg day, and then I have like a top up hamstring, shoulders and triceps day.
Okay, nice.
And it's all sort of like low volume, high frequency. So a lot of the sets are, say, 2 all out sets of 5 to 9 reps and 10 to 12 to do that sort of undulating, hitting all the different types of muscle fibers.
I like it, man. It sounds good. What does your nutrition look like around training, and talk to me a little bit about supplementation. Are you a fan of things like pre-workouts? What do you think of stimulants, for instance, and what do you think are beneficial things to use supplement wise around training?
So my pre-workout meal is oats and whey isolate. So for me, I just find raw oats and whey isolate made up with just water sits perfectly in my stomach.
Yeah.
I did try cream of rice before, but I found just the oats for some reason sits a little better.
Okay.
As opposed to pre-workouts, it depends. With my own job being a shift engineer, we do a month of days and a month of nights.
Oof.
So sometimes when I fall off the night shift, I only sleep for 2 or 3 hours when I finish that morning of nights.
Okay.
So that sort of feeds into my sleep for the next couple of days. So normally on the month of nights, I use a little bit of stimulant to get me going pre-workout during that month.
Okay, but it's not that's not like a full-time thing. You don't take a caffeine or whatever every time you train.
No. But I do like some of the decaffeinated pump products, like I was using Redcon's one. And also, what we've currently done with Supplement Needs is developed an intra-workout amino acid, which actually delivers 9 grams of citrulline malate in a serving, as well as a full dose of essential amino acids.
Nice.
So in the last while, I've been supplementing with that pre-workout and then doing another serving intra-workout.
Nice. What do you find personally doing an intra-workout? Like for myself, I think like I have seen when I'm training hard, especially with real intensive workouts, I recover a little bit better, I think a little faster. Do you notice that?
Of course, yeah. No, I definitely do. And again, that's another thing that people haven't been really educated on, and that when you are taking intra-workout supplementation, the carbs that you're sort of consuming during the workout aren't actually feeding into the work capacity that you're doing currently. They're sort of, you know, helping then feed off into glycogen synthesis post-workout.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan. Like, I've been using intra-workout supplementation now since it was sort of brought to the forefront by Jordan back in 2012, 2013 was who I sort of learned it from.
Yeah, it only makes sense that he would eventually get to intra-workout nutrition, because he eats so much that, like, eventually it's like, well, where else can I put food? You know, logically, the only place that's left is workout. So I can see how he got there. What about, you know, he mentioned, I think, 9 grams of citrulline malate, man. That's a hefty dose. I think a lot of the products I see, even the things that are, you know, the more expensive, multifaceted pre-workouts, maybe have like 6 at the most.
Yeah, I mean, when me and Lee are designing supplements, we're always pushing for clinical dosages. So obviously, 9 grams of citrulline malate will only really provide 4.5 grams of citrulline, because it's in a 2:1 ratio.
Okay.
So you need to understand then that you're losing some of the citrulline malate to malic acid. And that's where a lot of companies, you know, take shortcuts, and that they will sort of fob off that they're giving you the clinical dosage, but they're not really. So if you say clinical dose 6 grams citrulline malate, it's not really, because it's a 2:1 compound.
Okay.
So you get around these label claims. So when we were putting together the intro workout for Lee, and then again when I was helping Jordan with formulating the intro workout for Trained by JP Nutrition, it was, what can we add into these products that's going to make a significant impact to when the athlete is training? So in say, for example, in the Trained by JP amino acids, the intra EAA drink that we put together, MPS Max, there's specific ingredients that we've added in there to aid post-workout recovery.
Okay.
For example, we've put in a patented beta-glucan yeast extract called Wellmune, which will actually, there's been clinical studies to support that it aids immune function in intensely trained athletes.
And you found this? I have never heard of this before.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, this is a hidden gem of a patented ingredient. So when we were putting together the formulas, like I said, for both, it's what can we add to these that's going to make a big difference to someone's training quality and then their post-workout recovery.
Okay. Nice, man. You know, I wanted to segue a little bit, because one of the main things that I had heard, several people said to me, hey, you should get Dr. Dean on to talk about his thoughts on post-cycle therapy. And it's something that, you know, when if you were to do a Google search right now, you could find probably 300 different versions of a PCT. I don't know exactly what yours is yet, but I know that you don't necessarily agree with a lot of those search results that I would have come up with.
No. And the reason why, again, this was a personal discovery of how I came to come up with my own PCT theory. And then, as I said last year, I had enough of seeing all this bro science of basically the issue. And I'm sure people know about Thomas O'Connor, the anabolic doc. He has a book which called America on Steroids, and that basically goes into you know, how MDs should be approaching the topic of AAS in okay. either general population or bodybuilders.
Okay.
And PCP is like the biggest thing that either general practitioners or endocrinologists just aren't either interested or they don't care with learning how to address PCT in strength athletes.
Okay.
So if we take it down, if we apply the functional medicine approach of the HPTA, which is the hyperpituitary testicular axis, that's how testosterone is made in the body. So it's been probably covered loads of times, but you basically have a hormone that's output from your hypothalamus called GnRH, so gonadotropin releasing hormone, that acts on the pituitary and that outputs FSH and LH, so follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone. So those two are your two fertility hormones.
And we have covered it before, but please, just for anybody who may be tuning in for the first time, can you please tell us what FSH and LH do?
So LH, luteinizing hormone, feeds off to the Leydig cells in the testes in males.
Okay.
So what that does is it actually stimulates intratesticular testosterone to be produced. And okay. again, when you're a natural athlete, that is the total testosterone being made by your body.
Okay.
And then you have FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, which then feeds off then to stimulate the Sertoli cells to initiate spermatogenesis. But that's all based off the fact of LH getting the Leydig cells to make intratesticular testosterone.
Okay, and what's spermatogenesis mean? Sorry, I'm going basic here. I'm going basic.
the generation of sperm cells, obviously okay. within your Sertoli cells are within your testicles. So you have two types of cells in your testes. You have Leydig cells for testosterone production and you have Sertoli cells for sperm production.
Okay, so two different things, but obviously interrelated.
Yeah, they're interrelated. Now, the issue with modern day PCT and the bro science PCT protocols out there is that it just doesn't understand basic pharmacokinetics. So my background, I've done a Bachelor of Science double honors degree in chemistry and pharmaceutical chemistry. So within that degree, we've done areas like pharmacology, toxicology, drug design, etc. So if we apply pharmacokinetics, so pharmacokinetics is how a drug moves through the body.
Okay.
And how it affects all the different processes within the body. So one of the things that's within pharmacokinetics are clearance times, so half-lives. And it's about having a basic understanding of when you use these compounds, they have pharmacokinetics, they have mechanisms of how they move through the body, of how they're absorbed by your cells, how they're distributed, how they're metabolized in your liver, and how they're cleared.
Okay.
But the issue that stemmed was that everyone's aware of the Power PCT protocol by Dr. Scali.
Absolutely.
And it's in William Llewellyn's anabolics book. Now, recently, Dr. Scali actually put out a article on a website. So I'm one of the contributors on this website, also known as steroidabuse.org. And he basically breaks down his PCT theory. Now, in anabolics, William Llewellyn says that there should be an overlapping phase between when you use gonadotropins, which I'll get back to now in a second, HCG or HMG.
Okay.
And 2 weeks after your last shot of a compound. Now, if you give that general advice, wait 2 weeks after your last shot, you're not taking into account the ester that's attached to the compound. So again, you're looking at the half-life of how the drug gets excreted from the body.
Right.
Now, to take this back all again, how does your natural production get shut down? So there's four main ways. You have a peptide known as inhibin B that's produced in the Sertoli cells. And that regulates how FSH is produced from the pituitary. So when you have high inhibin B, that reduces the output of FSH.
Okay.
When you have, the second one is when you have high testosterone in the body, or more importantly, high levels of estrogen aromatization. So estrogen then feeds back onto the hypothalamus, which we discussed, and that reduces the pulsation of the gonadotropin-releasing hormone.
Okay.
So now you have less GnRH being output by the hypothalamus, which means now you have less GnRH acting on the pituitary, and by doing that, then you have less LH and FSH being output to produce testosterone in the testicles.
Okay.
Then the last one really would be prolactin. And again, prolactin is such a complex molecule in the male body, but basically prolactin, high levels of prolactin, which probably would be in the more case of a prolactinoma, which would be a tumor producing prolactin within the pituitary, that has an inhibition mechanism in and of itself. That can lower LH and FSH production.
Okay, so these are four reasons, basically, that production is downregulated.
Yeah. Okay. So when people use exogenous compounds, it's the second one where we've increased the testosterone in the body, or more importantly, you've increased aromatization. So now you have higher levels of estrogen than you would naturally.
Okay.
Now you're downregulating the hypothalamus to output GnRH.
Okay.
And that all feeds on to LH and FSH. Now, with PCT and the Power PCT protocol, the protocol that's given out in the books is using, it's changed over the years, but the basic theory of it is using 2,000 IUs of HCG, which is human chorionic gonadotropin. And you basically run 2,000 IUs every other day for 20 days.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Let me let you finish. I think you almost answered my question anyway.
Yeah, you start that 2 weeks after your last shot.
Okay, okay.
For 20 days. And after those 20 days, then you progress into SERM therapy, so selective estrogen receptor modulators. So these compounds act on estrogen receptors. So we have either tamoxifen acting on the estrogen receptors to block the action of estrogen, or we have clomiphene, which is a agonist within the pituitary to basically amplify signaling for LH production. Now, the issue here is that if you start a PCT 2 weeks after your last shot, you're not taking into account the pharmacokinetics of the compounds that you used. So if you used testosterone enante, for example, the half-life of enante is between 5 and 7 days.
Okay.
So if you took 200 milligrams, say 2 weeks ago, after 2 weeks, that concentration of compound is at 50 milligrams still in your system, theoretically. So the first week it's 200, second week it gets halved, and that's now at 100, and then the following week it gets halved again. You've now got still 50 milligrams of that compound in your system.
Yeah.
Now, if we look at the goal of the PCT, it's to get the HPTA axis functioning by itself. So if you have exogenous testosterone still in your body from when you took it 2 weeks ago, you're still feeding into that mechanism, which we discussed, of increased testosterone in the body, you know, feeding back onto the GnRH pulse.
Sure, sure. But so even at that low of a dose or a level, I should say, it still will have an impact on your ability to begin kicking on your own.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where, again, the overlapping concept, in my eyes, you should just wait until the compound is fully cleared. Yes, there are issues in that you're going to a zero hormone baseline, which in of itself may have effects in terms of, you know, psychosocial issues of being depressed and down. But it's the only guaranteed way to ensure that there's nothing present in the system. So you've gone back to a zero baseline.
Yeah.
Then what you can do is introduce gonadotropins. So gonadotropins are LH and FSH. But obviously we can't take them directly. So what we have done is we've synthetically produced compounds which mimic these natural hormones. So HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, is a natural mimic of LH. So when we have the testosterone fully cleared from our system, or whatever compound we've used based on the pharmacokinetics, so generally what you want to do is wait. The general rule in pharmacology is 5 half-lives almost ensures that a compound has left your system.
Okay, so much longer than 2 weeks in the case of testing.
2 weeks, yeah. So for an anti, you're looking at 5 weeks.
Okay.
So my advice is that you wait those 5 weeks and get blood work done.
Hmm.
Now you're assessing where your TT is, your total testosterone is. So is it at a zero baseline, or is there still some compound in your system? Then the second thing after that is that your pituitary may, after that clearance period, started to take over by itself. So you may start to see LH and FSH, rather than being zero or less than 0.1 in a blood test, you may see it start to rise.
It might kick on its own. Okay.
Yeah, that your pituitary is now starting to take over because there's no compound present. And again, this is where conventional medicine or some general practitioners don't have the sympathy in that they say to just AS users that approach them with post-cycle therapy and that, oh, just wait 6-7 months, your natural system will take over.
Mm.
So what we can do then is we can use human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, to act as an LH mimic to now get the Sertoli cells making testosterone.
And so you don't want to start doing that until the testosterone is totally cleared from your body.
Whatever compound you've used. And I mean, this is where equipoise, baldenone, just really does my head in sometimes. And that half-life can be 8 or 9 weeks.
Yeah. So there's no benefit, though, because that's the thing I've heard a lot, and that's what I followed, is to use HCG even while still on cycle, continuing to kind of force production, even then through, and then stopping it once you get to running a CIRM in post-cycle therapy. You're saying, though, don't do that. You're saying you want to wait till everything is totally cleared.
Yeah, and then you're actually putting in the stimulation to go, right, Leydig cells make testosterone.
Okay.
But again, you need to understand that when you take HCG, you're applying, again, an exogenous hormone. So that intratesticular testosterone result that you get after using HCG is based off that external stimulation. It's not your body making that testosterone, as to speak.
Yeah.
So what you do is you basically come at it at a multifaceted approach. So you know that exogenous HCG is going to increase LH, which is going to increase intratesticular testosterone. But that intratesticular testosterone can aromatize to produce estrogen, which will then feed back onto the hypothalamus and effectively cause shutdown.
Mm, yeah.
What you need to do then is you need to block aromatization when you are using HCG to ensure that that estrogen feedback never happens.
Interesting. Okay.
And that's where the concept of when you're running the HCG came from, where you want to use a, in this case, it's probably the only place where you'd use an aromatase inhibitor, and probably the best one, because we know that has direct effects back onto the hypothalamus, would be exemestane or aromacin.
Okay.
So the days following, you'd use your, you're basically taking the power PCT and applying all these theories of what feeds back or what stops feedback.
Yeah.
So you're taking HCG to boost intratesticular testosterone. And then the day after you take HCG, you're taking an aromatase inhibitor to ensure that that testosterone that's being produced from the HCG doesn't get converted to estrogen to feed back on the hypothalamus.
Okay. And so at this point, we're still not even into using any type of a serum then?
No. Like this is where we've gotten to our zero hormone baseline.
We've
initiated the gonadotropin therapy. We're ensuring that the Leydig cells respond to the external stimulation to produce intratesticular testosterone. So at the end of, what you really want to do is at the end of the 20 days, like Dr. Scali's protocol, you want to get blood work to assess what's happened to your intratesticular testosterone.
Okay.
Have the gonadotropins that you've taken brought that up to a natural level? So then you can start to understand, has primary hypogonadism, which is when the testicles fail to produce testosterone, has that occurred? Because then, you know, 6 months down the line, if you follow your bro PCT and you feel like crap, it probably could have been because you had hypogonadism, primary hypogonadism, at the very start of your PCT.
Mm.
And you could have avoided the pain of that 6 months of, you know, going through all the recovery and actually then understanding, well, gosh, I've really messed myself up from AAS use and now I need TRT.
Okay, so to catch, just to seat us where we're at, and for anybody else who might be getting lost in the murkiness of it. We've finished the cycle. We've given 5 times the half-life for clearance. Then we've initiated the HCG along with an AI to stop the feedback loop from basically shutting us back down. Okay.
Now, and then on top of that, you can add on then, you know, tamoxifen to ensure that even if estrogen is produced, you're blocking those receptors in the hypothalamus as well. So you're coming at it at, you know, the two angles of blocking the receptors and stopping the formation of the estrogen.
I follow you. And I think we're all up to speed then. Where do we go from there?
So you'd follow the PCT, the para-PCT protocol of running the LH at the HCG, I mean, at 2,000 IUs for 20 days. So every other day, 10 shots, 2,000 IUs, 20 days. And after the 20th day, get blood work done to assess total testosterone, FSH, and LH. So what you should see is that you've gone from a zero baseline now to, say, maybe 8 or 9 nanomolar, which would be probably somewhere around 300 nanogram per deciliter.
Okay.
So now you're sort of getting into the low end range of testosterone, but you now know that your testicles are making testosterone.
They're working again.
Yeah, they're responding to the external stimulation of HCG.
Okay.
So now if we know that the blood work is giving us positive results on total testosterone, then we can start to go, right, testicles are responding to LH and FSH externally. Now what we want to do is get the pituitary involved to take over from that external stimulation. And that's where we bring in the serum with clomiphene.
Okay.
So now we're applying clomiphene to the pituitary to amplify the pituitary's output of LH naturally. And now you're making natural LH, which feeds into the testicles to make its own intratesticular testosterone. And then you follow on for the general consensus in all the literature, start at 100 milligrams of clomid and then titrate all the way down. But again, when you move into serum therapy, you want to ensure that 4 weeks or 6 weeks after you initiate clomiphene that you get blood work done again.
Hmm.
And now by this stage, what you're assessing is, how is my pituitary naturally outputting LH under the stimulation of clomiphene?
Hmm.
So now what you're making, when your TT value comes back, you know that is natural production. That is what your testes are producing.
So at this point, are you still using the HCG?
No, so the HCG...
Okay, that was discontinued.
When you get that blood work done at the end of the 20 days, say, and your testosterone is normal, then you'd cease use and move into serum therapy because now you know that the testicles are producing a good level of testosterone.
Okay, thank you. I thought that was probably it, but I wasn't totally sure. So I just wanted to ask and clear it up for myself.
Sorry for not clarifying.
No, it was probably me, believe me.
if you have blood work done after those 20 days of HCG therapy and TT hasn't moved up into a normal range, but it has budged. So say it's at like 3 nanomolar, which would be like, say, 90 nanogram per deciliter, roughly.
Yeah.
You know that the testicles are starting to respond, but then what you may want to do is repeat that cycle of the 20,000 IUs of HCG and repeat blood work. Now, if you look at the literature, there is no data to support high dosages of LH causing insensitivities of the Leydig cells to the HCG.
I've heard this.
Like a common myth of like, oh, you take 2,000 IUs of HCG, you're going to fry your balls.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard it on the boards, but then I've heard contrary from people who've had real world experience who have used higher doses. So basically, you're saying it's the myth we see online that too much HCG will desensitize you and it'll stop working altogether.
Exactly, and I mean when you look at it, then when you get blood work done, if it was desensitizing you, you'd see your LH off the chart.
Mm.
Like 2,000 IUs of HCG every other day is enough to sort of bring your LH level through a blood work to around 1 to 2.
Okay.
Which is sort of, you know, the low normal range. Now, if that was, you know, causing insensitivity of the Leydig cells, you'd see TT drop, you'd see LH drop, but you're not seeing this in the blood work. And there's also a review article, which I have underneath the YouTube video, Flaws of Modern PCT. There's all the references there of, you know, dispelling these myths of there was a group of patients that were giving HCG at 2,000 IUs every other day or up to three times a week for 6 months, and we see no desensitization.
Okay. I'm going to make a note here. I want to tag that. I want to put that video in the show notes, Flaws of Modern PCT. So, guys, you can look in the show notes for that if you want to check more of that out.
Yeah, and I mean, underneath that video, I have two long paragraphs basically breaking down the science of what I speak about in the video.
Okay.
So that sort of helps people to understand where what I'm talking about in the video comes from.
Okay.
Now, if you do have to repeat that HCG portion again, and you get your blood work, so now you're talking, you know, 40 days you've followed HCG for.
Yeah.
If we don't see a response, then it's immediately go to an endocrinologist and assess what's happening, because there could be some underlying issue with the pituitary where you're no longer responding, or again, like I said, you've got primary hypogonadism where your testicles just aren't responding anymore.
Okay. You've been doing this, you know, for a while. I'm sure you've been watching a lot of people's results. Have you seen anybody who's been on long term, say a year, 2 years, that has been successfully able to turn that around and regain natural function?
I have.
Nice.
And if people follow my log on Trained by JP, they will get an understanding of 2015 to 2018.
Okay. That's awesome.
In my own log. So they can take it for what it's worth there.
That's great. Because that gives people hope. I know a lot of people, especially I think of some young guys that I've worked with who come to me and they want to do a contest prep, and they say, and then after that, I'm going to come off. And then I say, okay, you know, they've been on for a year or whatever. We do the prep. And then afterward, I try to help them with the PCT. And the next thing you know, our contest is over. We're not working together anymore. They drift off. And the next thing I know, they tell me, yeah, I didn't do that. I'm just running HRT. So they're 23 years old and they're basically just tethered to testosterone for the rest of their lives, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, this is where the whole thing that needs to be discussed in terms of a clinical setting with endocrinologists, in that we need to fully understand the potential mental dependence that forms on using AAS.
Whether
the dopamine receptors have been stimulated to an extent of using high doses of AAS. So we know that AAS transiently affects dopamine receptors.
Yeah.
So now when we move from a really high concentration of androgens to a normal concentration of androgens, say after a PCT, even though we are producing a normal level of testosterone, we may end up with libido issues, might end up with metabolic syndromes, because we've been used to being at that high level. We've now dropped to a natural normal level and all these side effects manifest.
Wow, that's a deep one right there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a whole other discussion. We could have then people that are then driven back to AAS because of they can't cope with these side effects of having normal, low, natural testosterone production compared to when they are taking AAS.
Wow. Yeah, I think we could probably all at some point relate to what you're talking about right there. And like you said, that's a whole other topic. I feel like we could do an entire show on that alone. Let me ask you though. So we get into the serum therapy. Where do you go from there? How far do you run that for?
So initially what you're sort of looking at is keeping tamoxifen at play. So again, you're sort of blocking the effect of if estrogen starts to creep up following the discontinuation of the HCG, you're keeping those receptors blocked in the hypothalamus. So what you generally do is you'd run Clomid for 10 days at approximately 100 milligrams. Then you titrate the dose down to 50 milligrams because, again, you can get sensitivity issues from high-dose clomiphene.
Oh, yeah.
And on top of that, it's a synthetic estrogen, as to speak, so you're going to be riddled with potential mental side effects of high estrogen.
Crying at TV shows, being oversensitive about your weight, yeah.
And I mean, this is where people are starting to question, does clomiphene have a place in PCT?
Mm.
In my eyes, it does, because it still has the effect of boosting LH production from your pituitary. So it still has a need for work. So we titrate the dose down to 50 milligrams. And then after those, say that's nearly 4 weeks of Clomid, you'd get blood work done to assess. Now I know everything's removed. I've been quite successful in boosting LH exogenously with HCG. I've removed that and I've got my pituitary to take over. Let me see where my natural hormone levels lie now in terms of TT, FSH, and LH. If everything is good, TT is back into a good, you know, normal range above, say, 9 nanomolar or, say, 320 nanogram per deciliter, we can then look to titrate the climate down to 25 milligrams. So we're slowly removing that stimulation on the pituitary. We could stay at that 25 milligrams then for another 2 weeks and then cease its use.
Okay.
At that point, we'd keep running the tamoxifen for another 2 weeks and then we'd get blood work done. So what we're doing there now is we've removed everything to get us to a sort of baseline of natural function.
Okay.
And that is where with the power PCT, not that the compounds being chosen was flawed, it was the method of delivery of that. Are you checking your blood work? Are you sure that the compounds are cleared from your system?
Mm.
Are you sure your pituitary is taken over? Rather than getting a surprise 7 months down the line after doing the theoretical power PCT, which is on all the forms, and then realizing, oh crap, I've made a mess of my PCT, my TT is in the gutter, my LH and FSH aren't high, and you're sort of then thinking, do I go back on to make myself feel better, or do you go and try and do another PCT to boost those levels?
Yeah. And the way you just outlined this, it makes total sense. This is very, like I said at the start, man, it's you made this into a very logical breakdown. You've demystified it, really.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, again, like I said, if people read my log on the Train by JP forum, they will see why I come up with this protocol. Again, it was to address a personal need.
Yeah. So, I got one question for you. So going back to the discontinuation of steroids and waiting the 5 half-lives before beginning the HCG, I have personally seen, and I've seen it in others, where people start to get estrogen issues in that phase where everything starts getting out of whack, hormones, you know, the androgens are going down, and my guess is then estrogen is going up. And I've personally, and I've seen others, like I said, I've had a harder time managing estrogen after the cycle for a period of time versus even when on it. What are your thoughts on using an AI during that 5-week window?
Again, if you are starting to develop physical manifestations of high estrogen, so water retention, higher blood pressure, increased fat storage, then of course incorporate in the aromatase inhibitor to lower aromatization rates, because again, you want to make sure that estrogen production is low going into the PCT.
Right, because you were saying that that in itself could be a reason to stop test production is high estrogen, right?
Exactly. But again, also what you could look at doing is AI is control aromatization. So again, it's an enzyme converting testosterone to estrogen within our tissue cells. You could look then at supporting how estrogen is cleared from the body using, you know, COMT and phase 2 metabolism of the liver. So you need to come at it at two approaches. So one way you're blocking estrogen production, the other way you're actually facilitating its clearance from your body.
I never would have thought of that. Which ties into what you were discussing earlier with liver and COMT. Yeah. That's badass, man. I never would have made that connection without this conversation.
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly how logically I've started to think that, yes, we can take, you know, taking an AI is sort of, you know, the conventional approach of we're blocking the symptom of high estrogen by blocking estrogen production. Whereas the functional approach would be, well, what enzymes are clearing estrogen from the body? How can I support that?
Yeah. Dude, this is freaking cool stuff, man. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing everything. This is this is really educational. I appreciate it.
I'm absolutely delighted. I'm just so passionate to get this sort of critical thinking towards bodybuilding now moving into this sort of new era.
Yeah. Yeah. What's going on, man? What's like next? What are you focusing on at this point?
I've currently been associated with Youth Revisited, which is a private blood work consultation service in the UK.
We've talked about that with Dave Kelly, or I'm sorry, Dave Crossland.
Yeah, and Dave is one of the experts associated with the company also. So what I've put together is a comprehensive athlete panel, which covers everything from hematology to liver function, kidney, inflammation, diabetes management, a full hormone panel, stress, cortisol, vitamin D, and methylation. So obviously, how are your cells regenerating themselves? And the whole thing there is that you're sort of giving this information privately to someone to take, basically take their health into their own hands if they're not getting anywhere with a general practitioner.
Okay.
Because again, like I said, if you approach the general practitioner in terms of either post-cycle therapy or on-cycle therapy, a lot of them are reluctant or they have a stigma approach of, oh, I'm not helping you because you take steroids.
Yeah.
Or they have their own stigma rather than actually being professionals and letting go of those personal stigmatizations and actually taking that patient's critical health into consideration.
Yeah, so here in the U.S., we have different online services where we can just order labs, but this is more than that, right? You, like you were saying, Crossland is involved. We can then turn to you guys and actually get feedback and better understand what's going on versus just get a set of numbers.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm actually involved in terms of consultation. So if someone gets their blood work through NutriVisit, they can actually arrange for a consultation with myself to discuss what's happening, like what we've discussed during this podcast, exactly what's going wrong with your health.
Wow.
You give me, you know, your whole clinical history and background, what you're using, what health supplements, etc. And then we can start to build a picture of actually what's happening in your body. So you can then understand, all right, such and such is wrong with my lifestyle or my diet or, you know, what's going on in my environment that I need to address.
That's cool, man. I mean, I think it could benefit anyone, but I feel like, you know, out of the people I work with, there's some cases that are a little tricky. Some things, you know, you can just, some things are pretty textbook, but then there's some things where I feel like it would be, I mean, anybody could benefit from it, but there's some people I bet you could really help that just some people that just, it doesn't make sense. Not everything is black and white, you know? I mean, you know that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, even today I put up an Instagram story about a client that I've been working with for 7 weeks. And this person came to me, and obviously when I take on someone as a coach, I require, you know, all your previous history, your health markers. And then what I like to do is watch, you know, biofeedback. So give me your blood glucose numbers daily. Give me your blood pressure numbers daily. How well is your sleep? How well is your environment? How's your sleep quality? Anyway, this person, when they came to me 7 weeks ago, their blood pressure was like 150 over 90. It was sky high.
Okay.
So initially I said, right, we need to address this. So his diet was quite high in fats. He wasn't doing any cardio. So the initial implementation was reduce a small bit of fat, but put in some cardio to see what happens to his arterial elasticity. So if we do cardio, we're improving the vascular tone of the arteries. So we're making the blood flow better.
Okay.
If you can think of pulling an elastic tight, that's what's happening when you have high blood pressure. And then when you loosen it, you know, the elastic is able to move up and down. So the blood's able to flow freely. So we're improving that vascular tone with cardio. And after 4 weeks, every check-in he was sending me blood glucose data, and I'd always have this one outlier. So in terms of UK measurements, it was say 6.1 millimolar, which I think is around 130 nanograms, and then it would drop back down to 4.2, and I would continue on sort of normal, and then I get another 6. And I watched that for 2 weeks, and I was slowly, you know, adjusting diet and slowly adjusting cardio to see whilst we address the sleep pattern. And we addressed, you know, environmental issues. And we've seen an improvement. His blood pressure dropped down to 132 over 80, but it's still quite high. Like, I don't really like blood pressure to stay high for too long.
Sure.
And again, I knew that there was some, rather than saying, right, let's stick you on cardotone or stick you on, you know, an ACE inhibitor like ramipril or lisinopril to bring your blood pressure down, I actually want to figure out why you have high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And address that. So at his check-in last week, I then failed to recognize at the very start when he started with me one critical part of his supplementation, which was growth hormone.
Hmm.
So I quizzed him on his growth hormone usage and said, prior to working with me, by this stage, he had been with me 7 weeks using 4 IUs daily, which to me wasn't excessive. But when I quizzed him, I said, how long before working with me have you been taking growth hormone? I assume maybe a couple of weeks. It turns out this person was using growth hormone for 6 months straight.
Okay.
At 4 IUs without a break.
And the light bulb went on at that point for you, huh?
Light bulb went on.
Yeah.
High insulin, high blood glucose measurements, high blood pressure, high fat diet, everything pointing towards insulin resistance.
Okay.
So again, now what happens there when we have insulin resistance, we have a higher likelihood of blood glucose feeding onto inflammation, which will feed on to, you know, your vascular tone and blood pressure issues. So last week's change I checked him was, let's get rid of the growth hormone. I've reduced your fat down now quite significantly to somewhere around, I think it was 65 grams. And this guy is, I think, 232 pounds.
Okay.
Within that week of removing growth hormone, reducing his fat slightly, this week I check in, his blood pressure was at 120 over 65. His blood glucose measurements were all steady at 4.1 nanomolar.
Nice.
And now we see that long-term, you know, supplementation use of growth hormone was causing insulin resistance, causing high blood pressure. So there was the root cause. So I addressed the root cause rather than band-aiding the issue.
I could keep going. I can think of like three questions I could ask you to like just keep going and going, but we're about out of time. I do want to ask though, tell me, where can everybody reach out to you if people want to get a hold of you? You know, I want to know about everything with Youth Revisited and with the supplements and everything you're doing at JP. Just please plug everything for me right now.
If people want to reach out to me, it's probably through Instagram. So my Instagram user is DEANSTM, and that's also my YouTube channel. So there's a couple of videos on YouTube explaining the flaws of modern PCT and then some of the supplement needs products like the Steep Stack and the liposomal range. If you want to ask me questions directly or pick my brain, I'm always on Jordan Peters and Karen's forum. So I'm on that daily, because obviously I am a sponsored athlete of Jordan's also. So I'm on that website every day as the educator, along with two other guys, Stephen and Peter.
Nice.
And we're there to provide, you know, non-biased guidance to any question you can think of.
Of course, that's trainedbyjp.com, right?
Trainedbyjp.com, yep. Right. I think the subscription is $6.99 per month. So you have access to myself, Stephen, Peter, Jordan, Corin, James, there's a whole new host of athletes joining, Ryan, Hayter, Claire. It's going to be a huge team where we're going to be a one-stop shop of, you know, getting out non-biased educational information.
That's through the.
And then if someone wants to approach for, say, a consultation or anything, then my email is on my Instagram page, which is deanstm@hotmail.com.
Okay. And then supplement needs itself is, do they have a website?
Yeah, it's supplementneeds.co.uk.
Okay, awesome, man. Anything else?
I suppose what's coming next is I've got the Dr. Dean Rangers to speak coming with supplement needs. So I have a liver stack, a heart stack, a blood pressure stack.
Ooh.
To follow on from the sleep stack. So I'm putting everything that I know when we're looking at, you know, these issues, what can I put into a, you know, 3 or 4 capsule serving that you can take daily rather than having to buy 15 different supplements in your supplement cabinet.
Right, right.
Which I think everyone, including myself, has fallen into over the years, that you have just a drawer in a press that's just full of bottles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have an entire cabinet upstairs. We have dishes, supplements, more dishes. That's it.
I have the same here. My wife is giving out to me. We have a baby due in 3 weeks, so I have to clear out some of my presses here in the kitchen for the baby.
Oh, no kidding. Well, congratulations ahead of time on that, man. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, this has been really great. And this is, it's so cool, man. It's so fun that we can connect to so many different people in the world today. We're talking to you all the way over there in Ireland. beautiful country, man. I'd love to come and visit sometime. And I'm looking forward to seeing everything you're doing, you know, over at Trained by JP. And definitely, guys, all this stuff we're going to have linked in the show notes. So be sure to check him out. Dr. Dean St. Mart, thank you, sir, for joining me. This has been my pleasure.
Pleasure's been on mine, guys. I said I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so this is a huge honor to be asked. I'm a huge fan of listening to Dave's show, Scott, with Muscle Minds, because obviously I work in Dublin and I live in Northern Ireland, so I've got a 2.5-3 hour drive at the start of the week and the end of the week when I'm traveling up and down. So you guys definitely, it's always something that I'm looking forward to when I'm doing that drive, because I get to catch up on my podcasts.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad that we can be there for you. And guys, we will see you soon. Thanks for listening. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends, and they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.